So before I launch into my thank yous, and I won't hold you, I hope, too long, but I've got to, first of all, explain what is going on here today, okay? So this is, in fact, my 70th birthday. This is a celebration of computer science at Harvard. And I'm going to come back to what I really think we're celebrating about computer science at Harvard at the end of this. But what is happening is that I have announced that I am going to retire someday, okay? I am like not retiring tonight or anything like that. And as one of my former students emailed me, he said, I thought Harvard professors never retired. It's just that Harvard stops paying them after a certain point. So yes, the point at which Harvard stops paying me is a few years out. But and as Cliff said, the next 2 years, I'm going to be teaching a class on the 50 classic papers of computer science that every computer science student should have read if they're going to be called a computer scientist. So that's going to be super fun for me for all the reasons that I think you can integrate from the talks that have come today. I'm interested in all different aspects of computer science and lots of things that aren't computer science, and I do believe everybody should know some history. So that's what we're celebrating. We're celebrating a phase transition for me, and we're celebrating computer science at Harvard. So I really can't tell you how much it means to have so many of you here from the five different decades in which I've taught here. And you know, if I thanked everybody, we'd be here all night, and I think some people are not going to last all night. So please trust me that if I don't mention you specifically, I love you also. So I want to thank my students who have so willingly cooperated in creating the illusion that I know how to teach. It's an old saw that you learn more from your students than what we teach them, but it's certainly true in my case. I never had a proper education in computer science. The field barely existed when I started in 1974 on the faculty, and Harvard's program was not all that strong. I actually switched from systems to theory in the middle of grad school because I'd been married for 5 years by that time, and I wanted to finish fast. That's the only reason I'm a theorist. It's honest and true. So let me give you the quick bio. So I worked in computer graphics as an undergraduate after actually being driven out of math by math 55 at the time. Like, how many people were driven out of math by taking math 55? I love it. The math department has done more to create computer science than it has any idea. So, and then I was in physics for a year until I completely screwed up a lab experiment. You know, I divided 10 plus or minus 5% by 2 plus or minus 5% and got 5 plus or minus 5%, which seemed to me like the right answer, but wasn't. And so then I moved into computer science after I basically lied myself into a programming job on a mini computer. And I worked with Ivan Sutherland, who was in computer graphics. Left for 2 years to do national service. I was at NIH as a commissioned officer, traveled for a year in Europe, came back and started graduate school, and have been here ever since. So that's the quick bio. But in graduate school, I really did notice that all the systems students seemed to have gray hair because they were too valuable to be allowed to graduate, and I wanted to finish quickly, and I discovered that I could published theory papers, and people thought it was wonderful. And I, unlike Eric Roberts, did not grow up wanting to be a college professor. I had no concept of being a college professor. My parents were doctors. My older brother, who's here today with us, is a physician. I knew I didn't want to do that, but I respected it. Just I knew it wasn't me, and I just figured I was going to go into industry. But the job was there at Harvard, and I got it. My wife was in graduate school by that time, so I didn't want to leave Cambridge. And one thing led to another, and I've been at Harvard my entire career. When whoever it was who brought up the Q, Stewart, brought up the Q Guide rating from 1974. I had taught that graduate seminar that Guy Steele talked about, and then I walked into a classroom of 350 people in Science Center B to teach NatSci 110, a course that existed already, so I had somebody else's notes to work from, but that was my first teaching experience. So I've counted on generations of smart freshmen to teach me what I need to know about computer science, and there are some who taught me other things, so I want to just give you a flavor of what I think I've learned from my students. So I want to give a nod to the woman I taught in AM110, which is what CS51 used to be called, the course Danielle talked about. Around 1980, who told me at a house dinner that she would be giving a piano recital in a few days. I didn't realize at the time she said that she was going to be giving the recital in Carnegie Hall. And so just making conversation, I asked her if she practiced the piano every day. And she said, well, I did practice every day from when I was 4 years old until assignment 7 was due. For those who remember the old AM110, that was the garbage collector, which is really hard to write in assembly language with no debugging tools or anything like this to speak of. So I'm not sure that conversation made me kinder. I like to think I've always been kind, but it did make me a little gentler. Then there was the guy who introduced me to his boyfriend a few years ago, and not anybody I remembered, and he thanked me, and not for anything I taught him in computer science, but for pausing in the middle of my proof of the recursive undecidability of the Entscheidungsproblem to describe the tragedy of Alan Turing's life. And it was, he said, the first time he felt at home at Harvard. And, so it's a lesson for all of you who are whatever your walk of life, the lesson in the importance of small human stories interspersed with whatever more serious or more professional work we're doing. There are lots of other students who've taught me about differences, and it's one of the great privileges of being at Harvard to be in the middle of such a genuinely diverse community. There was the German student, not Christoph, who informed me after a midterm exam in a programming course that required making a data structure for balls and strikes, that baseball was not actually intuitive to all human beings from the time they were born. Learned a little bit about cultural sensitivity there. Or more seriously, I had a Pakistani student who explained after I gave some probability homework that involved poker hands that Muslim girls raised in conservative households did not actually learn about aces, clubs, and jacks. So, I've got to give a shout out to a few people who aren't here to hear them. There was the brilliant Julia Schaffner, whom Michael Mitzenmacher will remember if Michael's still here. I think he was her classmate, and maybe classmate of a few others here. Yeah, TF'd with Ted, I think. She was an undergraduate TF of mine in 1980 who taught me the art of compromise and commitment. So after a bloody battle in a TF meeting, Julia and I agreed that I would be allowed to continue calling the traveling salesman problem by that name as long as I went on to say, whenever I explained this, that it was but a special case of the more general traveling salesperson problem. And those of you who've taken CS121 in the days since then know that I have kept true to that promise to Julia even now, more than 20 years after she passed away far too young. So anyway, and I've just got to mention one other, totally riveting memory of what interesting people you have in your class. So I went and I was teaching context-free language theory in CS121, and I talking about Chomsky normal forms and the general grammar, context-free recognition algorithms and stuff like this. And, you know, and we go into staff meeting and, you know, I just sort of take this, you know, I was trying to take the temperature of the class by talking to my TFs. And, you know, and one of them said, yeah, Harry was really into that when you were talking about it. And I said, Harry who? And they said, oh, Harry Chomsky. You didn't know that Harry Chomsky was in the class? They said, no, I didn't know that Chomsky's son was actually taking, learning about Chomsky normal forms from me. And I was glad that I didn't lapse off too much into narratives about that. So I've got to thank everybody who's taught me. Remember, I'm not going to have a retirement party, so I got to do the whole retirement party thing here. Ivan Sutherland, Sheila Grieback, Bert Drebin, you know, each of whom made a lasting impression on me in a different way. And especially, I got to give a shout to Doris Aronson, who's a person that probably none of you have ever heard of, psychology professor at NYU. She was here at Harvard when I was an undergraduate, who let me get away with murder in an independent study my senior spring. And had she failed me in my independent study, which she certainly should have done since I did absolutely nothing for it, my entire life would have collapsed, you know, seriously, because there was the Vietnam draft there hanging over my head and I couldn't get that commission without a college degree. So she agreed to pass me if I would return all of the books that she had lent me at the beginning of the term. So my entire teaching career, it's been very hard for me to be mean to any student with that memory lodged in the back of my brain. You know, people were good to you, so you should be good to them. So I want to thank my old school, Roxbury Latin, of which Larry Lebowitz and Dick Lewis are also graduates for a peculiar reason. They may not know what I'm going to say here. It was there that I learned that brilliance and weirdness were not inconsistent. Rebecca Nesson talked about my appreciation of oddballs. Well, the faculty was a collection of oddballs there. But it was a structured environment, a highly structured environment that actually acknowledged and protected a great deal of freedom of operation. And that is a general theory I have about freedom and creativity. You know, I learned to act there at Roxbury Latin. I was on the stage a lot. I used to, like my brother, give orate in Latin and so on. And you know, I firmly believe that while you actually have to, on one-on-one conversations with students, you have to make a personal connection, you have to have empathy and understand where the student is coming from. But nobody wants authenticity from the lecture hall, right? People want performance in lectures. And playing Henry IV was a very good preparation for being a Harvard professor. I think that's the reason why I could walk into NatSci 110 in 1985 and act like I knew what I was doing, because I was good at acting. As I say, mostly I learned that a great faculty, this is the enduring lesson for me, a great faculty resembles the Star Wars cantina with people, you know, tooting horns and with slimy brains exposed and, you know, drinking dangerous drinks and going on dangerous missions. So speaking of the Star Wars cantina, I really want to thank my colleagues in the Harvard Computer Science program here. They are an assortment of oddballs assembled from across the galaxies, but they are the best. You are the best, and I do appreciate and will continue to appreciate being able to work with you. And of course, especially the seven of you who actually I had as students, and the six of you among those who were my teaching assistants. Henry Leitner, Stuart Schieber, Margot Seltzer, Michael Mitzenmacher, Salil Vadan, David Malin, and Sasha Rush. So I'm going to mention two others by name. Deborah Abel, I don't know if Deborah is still here. She got a shout earlier today from somewhere. So Deborah is my long-suffering teaching assistant. She's basically been my teaching assistant almost every term since 1999. She still is running the Extension School program versions of my courses. And Eric Roberts, who I think still is here somewhere, right? Is it Eric Leaf? Yeah, there he is. Okay. So Eric Roberts, I just, you know, again, those of you who are in the field know this already. Those of you who are not on the field should know that Eric Roberts is, as Tom Lehrer would say, the greatest who ever got chalk on his coat, right? He is the best. And as someone who knew absolutely nothing about teaching when I walked into this enormous course in the fall of 1975, I had the good fortune to have Eric Roberts as one of my teaching fellows. And Eric himself had been a teaching fellow for Bill Bossert and Chuck Prenner when they taught the course. And I just like did whatever Eric told me to do, and I've been continued to do that ever since. Of course, Margot, most of all, you know, thanks for putting on this wonderful day. She was my TF in the fall of 1982, when she was a senior already, I think, in college. And I think it was not very long after that that I started thinking she should be a professor here. It took a decade before that happened, but if I had anything to do with bringing her back to Harvard, I think I've repaid all of my debts to the university by that one act. So, not to spend too much time on it, but can we all please just agree that I have the best family there ever was? Okay? To my brother Dick, thank you for providing the sibling rivalry that made me study harder, and for the love that shows that there was no winning and losing between brothers, and for the work to which you've devoted your life to save people's sight. Dick actually saw an article about me when I was dean in Harvard Magazine, and it included a nice picture of me working on a computer, and he called me up, not to congratulate me, but to say, "Dude, get new glasses." You know, I'm surprised he didn't give me the prescription, you know, there over the telephone, just by watching the angle at which I was holding my head here. Dick, for those of you who know what my office looks like, is the neat brother. He's the one that you want doing retinal surgery on you, okay? And as to the family that I had something to do with building, what a deal I've had. Nothing that has been talked about today, nothing that's happened in my entire professional career would have happened had I not fallen in love at a young age and had Marlon not insanely agreed at age 19 to marry me. So she's been my support and my soul for every step of the way, and for the past 30 years, also the supplier of the incredible students I have had the privilege to teach. So thank you for that. Although there were moments during my 8 years of dean of the college when I would come home from ad board meetings and, you know, roll over in bed with Marlon and say, "What idiot let that person in?" And she would usually say, "It was a faculty case, okay?" One of the best things about stepping back is that I hopefully will get to spend more time with her. Elizabeth, thank you for putting up with all the crazy people we had taking care of you while your mother and father were working back in the days before the terms parental leave and professional child care had even been coined. I'm told that it is the reason why both my daughters have such good social skills is because they so early learned to manipulate all of the crazy people who were their caretakers. Annie, thank you very much for the Larry Summers dollar bill you gave me in the fall of 2003, which you kindly asked the great man to autograph for me at your freshman barbecue. She shows up at my office door with this thing, and I just say, "No, you didn't do that, did you?" Okay, with kids like that, you know, how bad can life ever be, you know? So, and to Annie Elizabeth both, thank you for knowing everything and saying nothing all those years. You learn a lot by sitting around the dinner table every night with Harry and Marlon. And while I have the microphone, can we thank Elizabeth for bringing David Farenthold into the family? For, For those who don't know, Dave just won the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on Trump's charitable non-giving and for breaking the Access Hollywood video story. If anyone, by the way, this is a big group here, if anybody has Trump's tax returns by any chance, I'm sure Dave would be delighted to meet you. And finally, I want to thank Harvard for letting me get away with this scam all these years. What I mean is, you know, the privilege of teaching stuff that I actually don't know much about. I think what we are really celebrating today is, yes, computer science at Harvard, and yes, my 70th birthday, and yes, the fact that Harvard is breathing a sigh of relief that I really will go away at some point. But, you know, I think we're celebrating the twilight of the amateur era in computer science. You know, I taught CS51. That course existed, but it changed a lot while I was teaching it, as it's changed a lot under every subsequent teacher. And then all of these other courses that are now in the backbone of the curriculum, you know, CS121, CS50, CS124, the algorithms course, the BITS course is now come and gone, but the course, the gen ed course that I taught on with Hal Abelson, whom I'm happy to see here on the social dimensions of the information revolution, you know, CS20, and now this classic course that I'll be starting next year. So none of those courses exist. It's been about 30 years since I taught a course that I didn't start, and I created these courses just because they needed to be taught, not because they were what I knew. And, you know, I've always thought the job of the professor was to teach what needed to be taught rather than teach what the professor knows. And, you know, so I'm the product of a lot of on-the-job training. I learned computer science by doing it as an undergraduate in Ivan Sutherland's lab, as a public health officer, keeping the computers running at NIH. In a not very good grad school program here, by jumping around among topics, looking for the fastest way to finish my dissertation. And as faculty came and went, and as a faculty member, by deciding to teach courses because they didn't exist and I knew what students needed to know, even if I didn't know it myself. So some of you know that in addition to the computer science courses I have taught, I regularly teach a course on athletic amateurism. It's a freshman seminar. It's a fun subject to teach because I like sports, I like Harvard history, and the history of collegiate sports has a lot to do with Harvard history. I like freshmen, I like the Harvard archives, which we use extensively in the course, and, you know, for lots of other reasons. But those who've taken the seminar know that amateurism is not all that it's cracked up to be. The amateurism rules in sports were actually constructed to protect the British upper classes from having to compete against people who were stronger and faster than they were because they had worked with their hands, because the working classes had worked with their hands and they were better athletes. And the amateurism rules that you couldn't take money for sports and be a real sportsman were designed to exclude the people who didn't have any money. So amateurism is kind of a tainted concept, and that's part of the lessons of my amateurism seminar. But, you know, but I still think the concept has some nobility to it. It's an important idea that we can strive to do things at a high level because we love them, even though we have no professional training in them. That the key ingredient in excellence in anything is our own passion for it. And I'm very glad that we are past the amateur era in Harvard computer science. That is something, you know, that I was a product of, and I'm glad we're not passing along to the next generation a faculty consisting of amateurs. I've loved being part of it, but I'm glad that that day is gone, and I think it's pretty much gone from the entire field of computer science. And so I think, you know, this occasion, I think, is not just a celebration of computer science, but a celebration of the end of the amateur era. But having said that, I hope that the love and the joy and the fun with which I've experienced the field will never die here. Thank you.